welcome.
How are you?
How are you, Ali? We haven't chatted for a while. It feels like we haven't chatted for months.
Yeah, do the intro there.
Oh, the intro. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hey, welcome to the Visual Div.
Hello. How are things?
Hello. Two lads talking randomly on the podcast, and we haven't done it for a while, so we've forgotten how it works. How are you doing?
I'm good. I've been to New York and back in the last couple of weeks. And so we haven't done this in 3 weeks because we are really bad at scheduling our time. So we missed the Monday. And then I never told you that I was not in the country for 2 weeks. So communicating like a married couple we are.
There was definitely a lot of assumptions there. I remember thinking, oh, you've only been over for a couple of days and now you said you're on New York time. And I thought that meant you were at home, but you were kind of recovering. Jet lag. Getting over the jet lag. But obviously I didn't realize you were spending 2 weeks over there, having a great time.
Yeah, it turned out to be 2 weeks. It was 10 days or something, actually 10 or 11 days in America, but you take into consideration travel days. So yeah, it was probably 12 days in total, but it was 2 weekends. So what I was doing, this is going to sound so bougie, it kind of is, but my, I'm getting married in less than two months. So my best man lives in New York. So I was having a weekend with him and my other best man. And we were like just going around. We ate 5 times a day. It was ridiculous. And then, I did a bit of shopping and stuff for the wedding. And then my fiance, Vanessa, is from Canada. So she tied it up with having her maid of honor come to New York and her like bridal party were in New York as well. So it just started off as a weekend for me and the boys and turned into 12 days in New York where we had a weekend and the girls had a weekend and it was class. And I came home a couple of kgs way heavier. it was cool.
That wasn't just the luggage allowance either.
No. And thank God they don't put an allowance on our own personal weight. So yeah, I've had a great couple of weeks.
Is it still the case? I remember back in the day, my dad, he used to fly planes for a living. They used to fly over to the States and fly with the US Air Force, the USAF, I guess they called. And he used to go, right, kids, what do you want? What do you want? And he used to buy everything and pack it into the nose of his airplane. So it would get through customs without him having to pay tax and stuff. And he did it because it was so cheap to get stuff, like anything that you wanted. Like wanted a new tape deck or something like that. I'm showing my age now, like a new cassette tape deck.
Like a Sony Walkman.
Yeah, a Sony Walkman. It's like, wow, in America, you can get all this stuff. He used to bring back this stuff and it would be like a third of the price of the UK. He used to go out and he used to come back with all sorts of goodies for us. It was amazing. I don't know if you came back with loads of goodies.
I got a new MacBook because it is cheaper because sales tax in Ireland is 23%. So the product is the same price over there, but there's only like 9% or something in the States. In New York anyway, sales tax is tiny. So that's a chunk, you know, the difference, especially when you're buying a MacBook, it adds up. So I think that's the only thing how things are cheaper. But there's a sneaky one. This is a really sneaky one. If you're in Ireland as a tourist and you buy anything and it leaves the country, you get all that sales tax back. So if you buy a MacBook in Ireland or you buy clothes in Ireland or anything and you leave the country with it and that stuff never comes back into the country, you get the 23% back on all of those, all that spending. And there's like companies at the airport that will, they will do that tax return for you. But you don't have that same luxury leaving America, unfortunately. They take all your tax. But it's a lower tax.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's lower tax. But man, it's so, I've got family in Long Island and I've got my buddy Connor over in New York. And like I live 1 hour from the airport here and in Shannon Airport on the west of Ireland. And it is so easy to fly to the States. Because like when you fly from Ireland to the States, you do your passport control in Ireland. So it's a domestic flight. You know, so when you land into the States, you don't have to deal with all your passport nonsense. You just get off the plane and get in a taxi and go wherever you're going. I've flown from London to the States before and been 4 hours in customs just waiting for passport control to give me a stamp. But that's all done in Shannon or Dublin or Cork. Not from Belfast, though.
Yeah. And but that was also because you maybe just looked a bit sketchy, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Racially profiled as Irish or something.
You're a sketchy character. So, you know, at least in Ireland, you can speak to the locals, you know?
Come here. I actually know guys that have gone over from Ireland and they've been sent back because they thought they were going to skip the border and stay there and keep working. That's God's honest truth.
It does happen. Well, the thing is, like, it's not something you have in the UK, but you guys have this thing called, it's like me now, but I'm too old to qualify, but you have the J1 visa, which means that you can go over and do a holiday. Like, it's still short, isn't it? I think it's 3 months, is it? Something like that?
No, it's actually a year, but you get it for university.
It's a year.
So you get it you're in university, but it can last a year. But we don't use it to work. We use it to go over to San Diego or New York or, you know, Long Island for a summer and just have the crack, have lots of fun. So I did a J1 when I was 21 in Venice Beach. And I just worked in a hostel. But like, it just means you can legally work there for up to a year. I think it's up to a year.
My wife did it. She went to New York and she just worked for, she actually worked. She used it to work for 3 months. And she said it was ridiculous. Like the bar owners, the restaurant owners knew the Irish were coming over for the summer. And they just make the most of these people coming over and they work hard, play hard. And it's just, you work to play and then you go home and you have no money left because you've spent it all. But they go back the next summer and do it again.
And it's the concept of the, like, tipping culture isn't a thing in Ireland. So like when you go over there and you work in a bar, you go over to the States and work in a bar and someone at the end of your shift gives you like you could get $200 for, and you're 21 or 18 or 19 and you just got $200 cash money into the love, into the hand, you're just like, I'm doing one thing tonight. And then like wake up and do it all again. So yeah, it's, you know, you don't even have to wait till next Thursday to get paid. You get paid that night in tips. Yeah.
Oh, we had that in New Zealand. I was working in a casino bar in Queenstown in New Zealand, and we had these big money rollers. They'd fly them. So they would fly into Auckland, and then they'd fly them from Auckland down to a small casino down in Queenstown, in the middle of the mountain, like private jet all the way down. And then they put on like all the activities in the day. And then at night, these big rollers would come in and we'd have a separate room to play in. I remember this guy was tipping us 50, so it's New Zealand dollars, so not quite US dollars, 50 New Zealand dollars for every kind of rum and coke that we bought him. It's like
50.
This guy was spending, like, he was betting all sorts of money on this thing. And look, we, you know, we were there and we were getting paid, I don't know, whatever it was, $300, $400 a week. And this guy, and it was like, we were fighting to try and get into that room. You know, you wouldn't take a toilet break just in case your mate got called in and then he would take the shift, you know? It was like, it was just, I've never seen anything like it in my life. It was just, you bring the rum and coke and he'd replace his empty glass. You take the empty glass and he'd just slip a 50 under. You're like, this is now we weren't getting it individually, we'd share it out, but
yeah, yeah, go into like, a pot, but still, like, wow.
Oh, that's, man, it was...
I would... That's better than getting paid to build Webflow websites.
Oh, it was... It was the most...
I'd say you've never been paid, like... Yeah, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. But yeah, nothing's changed over here, so you're back to the day job.
Back to the day job.
But... And you've missed the you kind of missed the kerfuffle. You've been head down, obviously, in New York, enjoying New York, doing a bit of work over there.
I was working over there as well, but you know, not yeah. But I saw a bit of the kerfuffle online, but I just wasn't engaging in it.
No, you didn't. Not like some of us. We went head like feet first into the kerfuffle, which was obviously the new Webflow layout UI, where they've gone in and fair play, they told everyone beforehand, but they've kind of revolutionized or destroyed, depending on which side of the fence you're sitting, the layout UI that we all have come to love while we're building our websites, which, you know, everyone understands it's fundamental to the way that we build sites in Webflow. Like, you take the, you know, there's not probably, if you're building in Webflow and any hour you're building a Webflow, unless you're doing some sort of CMS job, you're probably touching this layout UI probably once every minute. You know, it's a good 90% of the actions that you do are on this Webflow, on the layout UI. So, you know, if you have been in a cave and you haven't seen what they've done, then yeah, go and check it out on Webflow. You immediately see what it is. But there was a lot of kerfuffle because it was quite opinionated. So, Alan, what do you initially think? Because you've got one, I think you've got a slightly different perspective to me, at least different perspective to my initial perspective. But I think I'm probably coming around to your side. But you give it a whirl to start with.
Yeah, so it was actually kind of nice to not, I wasn't working on the Monday that it was released. It was released Monday the 4th, wasn't it? Something like that. So I wasn't working that Monday. So I saw everything going on and I retweeted a tweet by Irish Ben because he was giving his perspective on it. And obviously like, Ben, like, I greatly respect like his opinion. So that's kind of what I said, is that I respect a lot. I've just seen a lot of people that I respect in the community saying similar things. I haven't had a chance to test it out myself. So I'll wait to give an opinion on it. But, and I saw three Webflow experts and an enterprise expert, I think, who were pretty opinionated on it, that they really didn't like how it was set up. And then I kind of forgot about it. And then I went back into Webflow and started working, not thinking about it. And I didn't notice. So that to me means that if you don't notice the difference, like I think I remember looking for maybe, I was trying to make a component. And I couldn't see where it was quickly. And then I saw maybe 10 seconds later and a smaller little icon over in the right, top right of where it used to be. So that was the first time I was like, oh, wow, I'm building in a new UI. So I think that's, I know it's only an anecdote, but it's proof of concept that it's actually well thought out. So having seen the reaction and then not even had time to process, just forgot about the whole thing because I was busy partying in New York and eating five times a day instead of working. And then came back into the product to fix a solution, fix a problem or to do things. And, you know, was trying to, it was doing, I was actually fixing, there was a, I got a list of bugs, pre-launch bugs for the product I'm working on, because we did a relaunch of like a phase two, and I had a heap of work to do, and it was just like, whoa, this is overwhelming. And honestly, it didn't, I didn't notice. Like, though, I wasn't cursing the UI saying I'm not able to work fast enough. I was just in there following my nose, basically, and just working away without thinking. So I think you have to give Webflow credit for that, that if someone, like, I've been deep in the tool for a long time, and I came into it, and I just I have to be honest and say I didn't notice any friction until I was trying to figure out how to make a component. And maybe it took me 20 seconds, 30 seconds to figure out where that is. And obviously, if that's happening every single time, that's a problem. But it wasn't. It happened once. And now I know where that little button is. And I think it worked quite nicely. Now, I have to caveat this with saying that for this product, I haven't set up a variables library yet for it. So I'm still looking at things in REMS, and I'm using, you were automatically moved over to color variables, which I haven't properly named. They've been automatically set up for me. So that's a project that I'll be doing in the next month, is setting up the variables properly and see how that takes. But going from like a vanilla JS or vanilla CSS kind of point of view, using client first and REMS, I thought it was quite seamless. It was a seamless enough transition.
So that last bit, you're referring to the variables and how they interact with the UI more so than the layout UI.
I don't know, but I've seen that you were pointing out a few things and other people were, but like, if there's an issue there with the variables and they've just launched variables and they've just launched the new UI, well, that it really shouldn't happen. They should foresee that may be a problem, is what I'm trying to say. So, but because I haven't seen that, hasn't affected me personally, I can't really comment too much on it.
No, that's fair enough. I think the variables thing is different. The variables issue, if we can call it this way, is completely separate to the layout UI. So this was happening way before the layout UI. It kind of happened day one of the variables being launched. But what's happened is over the last few, I guess, a few months, is people have started to use variables in lots of different ways. You know, you've got the Timothy Ricks is using them in weird and wonderful ways, and you've got other people in, like, you know, Corey in the new Mast framework, Corey and Max, doing it in a different way. And what's come to light a little bit with the variables, we'll come back to the layout UI in 2 seconds, but is that the UI hasn't quite kept up with the way that people have started to use variables and name variables and put variables in folders, at least in my opinion. You know, like, there's lots of nuance to it. It's like it's displayed in one part of the UI doesn't necessarily mean it should be displayed like that in another part of the UI. But there is inconsistencies in the way that it's being applied, which means when you are actually deep in a project, sometimes it can be hard to understand, like, what variable is being used for padding, or what variable is being used for font size, because the way you name it and the way the name is displayed means that sometimes it just comes up with font, or because that's a folder with a long name, or the long name is too long. And there's a bit of a kerfuffle over in Twitter where we were trying to push to get that changed, and some of the guys over there, Webflow guys, like, made some quick fixes. But I think generally, at least in my opinion, the UI hasn't kept up with the functionality of variables. Now, that's not to say it won't. There's, you know, obviously a lot of work coming down the line probably on variables because they've got a massive variables panel. They haven't touched breakpoints. There's lots of things coming down, and I'd imagine they're going to change things. But the interestingly, the Webflow, the layout UI, that was a big step change, and it was probably a big, like an overreaction in terms of the whole community. It's like, oh, we hate this. And there was a bit of Marmite about it. You know, you either love it or you hate it. There were a few middle grounds who was a little bit more pragmatic about it. I think you've just given a bit more of a pragmatic view on it. You know, it hasn't really disrupted my workflow. I think from my point of view, I would say I jumped on the bandwagon, but I was quite vocal about the fact that I wasn't a fan of some of the decisions they made. For example, I really applaud the way they've changed icons. So, you know, block, flex, grid icons into words, because at the end of the day, to read block, flex, and grid is so much easier on the brain than symbols. And also it equates to the real world of CSS. You know, for everyone to know, right, I click flex, I'm in the world of flexbox now. Now, you know, you could say flex and flexbox. There could be arguments say you should call it flexbox rather than flex, but there's a bit of shorthand going on. But then as soon as you get into flex, for example.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though. It's also display now, where before it used to be layout, right? Okay.
It's always been display. Always been display. Yeah. But the flex bit, once you're in flex, it used to be horizontal and vertical, and they've changed that now to a horizontal arrow and a vertical arrow. So a left to right arrow and a top to bottom arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that was a missed opportunity because they've gone in with the block, the flex, the grid. And then when you're in flex, those arrows, what do arrows mean in flex? They don't mean anything in flex. They like in the world of CSS, you don't ever use arrows. And I think it's a lost opportunity to educate people that there are rows and columns. And it would be really nice if they just put a row and a column, because straight away you're getting people into the realm. And you know, they talk about it being a pro tool. I felt they've kept a little bit too close to the Figma UI, and not sort of gone the halfway and gone, hey, look, we're all about HTML, CSS, JavaScript. Look, our new logo. It's all about, we're a pro tool for developers here, and brought the designers along with them and said, oh, look, if you click flex, you can deal with rows and columns, and this is how rows and columns work, and this is how a reverse row works, and this is how a reverse column works, rather than having these arrows, which I kind of know why they've done it, but I just feel like it's a missed opportunity. I think the nine point grid, I think initially I was thinking, you're just collapsing into this Figma world. But when I start to use it, I've definitely found it to be quicker and more intuitive. But again, they've got X and Y. Like, where the hell are X and Y appearing in this flex specification? There is X and Y, but it sits way, if you dig right down into the flexbox specs, there is that idea that X and Y play a role, because X and Y are kind of the axis. You know, it's a common terminology for axis. But the fact that they've labeled stretch as in a X and then top as Y, it just doesn't sit well with me, because those are actually align and justify. And whereas they used to have align and a load of icons and justify and a load of icons, they were like, that's how CSS is written. You write your align and you write your justify values. And they've got away with that. They've removed that. They left the line in there, but a line now sits across align and justify, which have been relabeled as X and Y, which obviously change depending on whether you use rows and columns. So it's not simple, But I just feel like there's a missed opportunity there. And they've got, I don't know, X and Y have been like crammed in because the UI space maybe warrants that you can't put a line and justify in. And yeah, so I think there's, okay, so that's my perception or my opinion on the UI element. And say, it's not the end of the world. I've come around to the idea that, hey, as what you don't know, you don't know. And as soon as you know it, it kind of becomes second nature. And we start moving quickly, you know?
Yeah, so like, I'm just actually, while you were talking there, I was just playing around with this like 9-point box with the align and then went into the X and Y. And while I do agree with you that we should try and keep the language of what we're doing as close to CSS as possible, there's like nice little features. Like when you go in here into the X and Y, it's automatically set to stretch. But then if you hover over right, center, and left, which are the align, how you would align the children of those columns, it on hover, it displays, it reacts on the designer. So there is something quite nice about that, because it is, you are visually developing there, you know, instead of having to select it and see what it does, it's happening just on hover, which is a really neat feature, because to me, that's a quick, you can make a quick decision off that. You know, you can just look at it and go, is it right? Is it wrong? Because the difficulty with CSS, and especially if you're going like with the children of a flex or children of a grid, is you do need to kind of conceptualize that a lot of time in your mind. Even with the old UI, you were thinking through this and clicking on it and seeing if it works. So you have to give kudos. Like, I agree with the language, but this little feature where you hover and it reacts to what you're doing, I think that's pretty neat. It just moves children up and down. And for me, that would make things, I can see it's making things quicker. Yeah. So it's a neat little feature.
I agree. The nine point grid is, you know, hey, like Figma have come up with it. They've obviously seen it work. I would assume other tools have got it as well, but I think it works. The 9-point grid works. As you said, it's a visual development tool. So they visualize placement of children. I think it's brilliant. It's just the language that comes with it. It just confuses me. It's just like there's justify settings or values inside an align section, you know? Mm. And that just throws me a little bit. And I just wish they'd maybe take a step back and gone, okay, let's throw some objections at this. And I'm sure they did. But this gets me on to the bit that I was a little bit confused about is the transparency of the changes and the explanation of how they came to those changes. Okay, so I was invited to a beta, and given I was late to that beta, I was probably joined that beta on the Webflow forum, maybe, I don't know, 3/4 of the way through. So I had a play with this before it came out, and I had a play with it, and you know, it took me a while. I had it on some projects and worked through it, and I made some feedback, which, like, whether that feedback was right or wrong, or whether it was warranted or not warranted, the feedback, I didn't get any feedback on my feedback, if that makes sense. So I got a few comments, but it felt like there was a few other bits of feedback there, and it felt like a lot of that feedback just got lost in the ether. And there has been some anecdotal comments from on Twitter, you know, right, whether they're right or wrong, I don't know, but of people doing the same. So they had they obviously spoke to experts in the background. I think they were very vocal about this. But it seemed like a lot of the feedback just fell on deaf ears. And I'm sure it didn't fall on deaf ears. It just, there was no feedback loop to assure people that they'd been heard, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's like the 101 lesson in this is, guys, if you're going to ask for feedback and open it up and really engage, and people are, are going to give you that feedback, at least like follow around and actually say, hey, thanks very much. This is the reason we did it, the X, Y, and Z. And then I think all that kerfuffle thing would have just disappeared because like you just bring people mm-hmm. along with you, you know? Having worked in a product team before, it's not this case of the customer is always right. It's not, that isn't the case. Sometimes there's a lot of research and theory and like foresight of what else is coming down the line that comes with building out products. And I get that. But you can't just invite people on and go, hey, let's know what you think. And then when they do let you know what they think, there's no real visible, transparent feedback. And I think, like, I mentioned it on Twitter kind of ad hocly, but like Maguire came on and did a video. So you've had Maguire, Alessia, and a few others have come on and done really, really good explainer videos. And I felt like Webflow hasn't done any of those. They had a private session with one of their heads of product, with a few people. They had, I think Sergey came on, one of the co-founders, and he came on and did a recorded session with Aaron. But other than that, I felt like they've not really come on and embraced people and gone, hey, we hear you guys. We understand. This is the why. Boom, boom, boom. And like Maguire's video, okay, he's ex-Webflow. He's very good at education. He's like, he has a way of doing things. But he just came on and I came out from his video going, yeah, I can see exactly what you were doing, why you were doing it. And, you know, it's not about being right or wrong. It's just about going with it and, you know, going with the decisions. And I felt like that is what they missed here. So because I come round, I was like, guys, you've changed all this thing. This is rubbish. I've used it for a while. I've gone, actually, this is not bad. This is not bad. There were
so I think though, like,
I would make, but you know, I just don't get it. I just don't get the way they act like this. I just don't. They like.
Well, the problem is
we're like one of the most engaged communities, but they don't engage.
Yeah, but the people who have been there who feel like they're incredibly invested in it, and like it's like anything. If you learn a language and then the rules of the language change, you're going to get a little bit of, you know, rubbed up the wrong way. And I think initially I would have been on the don't change it side. Definitely. I don't like change. I definitely don't like change when it makes when it affects work and you want work to be seamless. But I think if they're bringing us into, like, and I wasn't a part of this group, but if they're bringing the likes of us in there, sometimes we're the wrong people to ask because we don't want change, if you know what I mean. Not just trying to be devil's advocate here. Like if someone is like, oh, this, I don't want this to change because I'm used to working with it this way. That is a valid answer, but they may have tested this on 1,000 other people and their answers are different to us. And maybe this is where you're saying the feedback loop should be better. But, you know, our opinion is not impartial. That's what I'm trying to get at. We are very, I wouldn't say stuck in our ways, but changes like this will affect us. And even if in the long run, it's for the better, initially we might be very like anti it because we're woke up on a Monday morning and we're tired or something. But I remember back in the day when like, and I was only using Webflow a couple of months then, they completely flipped the UI. This is where the CSS lived. I believe it lived on the left-hand side of the UI and they moved it over to the right. And I remember that change. And I was only using the product for a short period of time then and having that, like, you know, that moment of like, oh, I don't like this because I just figured out what was going on. But really it was a better solution. And now I'm used to it and it makes more sense. But there is, I think there is an elephant in the room, which you touched on there regarding the speed at which Webflow developers are coming up with like incredible solutions and how they're using the tool. And then the limitations of the UI on, especially in the style panel towards how people are using it. And And one of those things is definitely the size of the inputs and the output fields, like how to see things and what you can read and what you can't read. So the way I notice it the most is when I'm using custom attributes. It's impossible to read custom attributes if you've got quite long values in there or multiple values in there. And it's very hard to see what's in there at a glance. So there's definitely, and I'm sure they're working on this, but there's definitely improvements that can be made because of how the whole product has changed so much in the last 4 or 5 years. And the thing that we touched on this with Corey when we were talking to him about mast and variables, that the thing that is so like nice about Webflow is how vanilla it all is. You know, it's like you see it's 16 pixels, it's one REM, and you get to play around with all these things and fix them and solve those problems in a very vanilla way. It's so straightforward. Once you know the rules, you keep going, you can come up with amazing solutions. And then when variables comes in, the UI is still set up for vanilla and for vanilla CSS, but then I think variables is definitely the way to go because I see the value in it, but I'm almost reluctant to go that route, especially when it comes to sizing and font sizing, because the UI for me, it reads better. I can see the solution to the problem better in vanilla CSS. But I use variables all the time for color because it makes sense, and I can see it and I can see the solution and see the problem and fix it. But when it comes to, like border radiuses and font sizes and padding, I'm still a little bit slow to take it up. And I think the main reason for that is my ability to read the UI with a variable attached to the size. Now, that's kind of the way where my head is at the moment with it. But at the same time, like usually when I'm working on a Webflow project, I've got two massive screens. You know, they're like, I don't know, over 2,000 pixels wide. They're both huge. So I have to recognize that there's a lot of people building on Webflow that are on 13-inch screens. So Webflow are designing a product for, and I've done this, like I've got a 14-inch MacBook that I use when I'm traveling. So I work on Webflow on a 14-inch MacBook, and then I work on it with a PC with two huge screens as well. So, and that, you kind of have to give kudos to the product team that moving between, like, I don't really feel that when I go down to my MacBook that I'm at a loss. I am working a little bit slower because you've got less to look at and you're scrolling in and out of things, but it doesn't break. You can see exactly what you're working on. You can see the results of what you're building really easily. So in that sense, it's really good. So yeah, got to kind of take both of those those perspectives into consideration, that they're building for their sit down dev at their desk with their huge setup, and also the dev that is down in, like, Irish Ben down in Portugal, traveling all around Europe with his teeny tiny laptop. I don't know if he's a tiny laptop or not, but you know what I'm trying to get at.
I think we do have to acknowledge that, yeah, as you've acknowledged there, that like the Webflow itself is brilliant. You know, we've a lot of people have known this for a long time, but lots now more people of us like are finding out that Webflow is amazing. It's brilliant, and that's why we use it. With that, unfortunately, and this is with anything in the world, like something goes to a 10 out of 10 over time, you know, that quality comes down and down. And actually, you know, look at Apple. Apple was like top quality, but people still find stuff to be angry about, I suppose, because they've set their standards so high. And I suppose that's where the Webflow, the variable stuff, I think it comes into that realm. It's like there are so many, like literally 99% of the Webflow UI has just been thought about. It's bang on. It works well. The variable stuff, it feels like no one's used it. No one's gone, I tell you what, I'm gonna create a new project and I'm gonna set up a load of variables and then I'm gonna pass it over to my developer friend and watch them use it and watch them go, oh, what does that mean? I can't read what you've put in here. It feels like it's those kind of little things where I think you touched on it. It's like ship fast, great, keep shipping, that's amazing, but don't ship stuff in the kind of like, it's got to be viable. It can't just be minimum product. It's got to have a viable nature to it. And if the variables aren't working in the UI, then they're not working in the UI. It's like, don't pretend that they are. Mm. The thing is with CSS, when you're writing variables, they invariably always look the same. You've always got enough real estate on, unless you've got really, really long ones. But that even the way they nest is you never really run out of room for variables because a code editor has just got this space. The Webflow UI has the challenge is you only have a finite amount of space to show these variables. But it looks like they haven't addressed this problem, because if you open up some projects now and you look at it, you go, I don't know what the hell is going on here. And then you have to open up the variables panel or click on it and then just dig down. Before you know it, your mind is so scrambled that you don't know what's going on. You know, it's a reason I don't use something like Lumos, is because I feel like Lumos, as clever as it is, and there are some things I wish I could get hold of, like some of the component stuff that Timothy Ricks is doing right now is just like mind-blowingly clever and user-friendly at the same time. But the Lumos system just feels like one step too far in the complexity levels. The Webflow variables, there are elements, like you mentioned color, brilliant. It's like, that's the kind of most basic use of variables. But blue is called blue, or primary is whatever it is. And it feels like it's a really nice, it works. And actually in the UI, there's space, they've given space to, you know, because maybe before they had the hex codes, and you could put a name to the color, they've had that space already. But when they come to values like padding or font size, or you didn't have to have big space for variable names there, and they put variables in, and they haven't changed the UI to suit that. And it's hard, because like you do want to use variables like you would in a non Webflow world, but you can't until the UI catches up. And I think, you know, yes, it's hard. Like, I do not envy a product designer at Webflow trying to make it work for every use case. But it feels like they're maybe a little bit behind the game on making it work for even the most basic of use cases from variables. And that's just an opinion, but I'm using it for some. I'm not using it for others for exactly the same reason that you had. Like, I just can't make it work. Like, border radius is a great one. Actually, I found a use case even this week where I've gone, say this week, it's only Monday, but this morning, where I'm using border radius for, you know, small, medium, and large for cards, because some cards like have bits nested in, images nested inside. So I, you know, use that little calculation and make sure the border radius suits for buttons and that kind of stuff. And it's really, really good. But then when I come to other bits, I'm like, I'm going to have to unattach all these variable complications, because I can't read what it says. And when I pass this over to the client, they're not going to be able to read what it says. And it's all going to fall down in front of me. And it's just, that's a disappointing bit. But anyway, I'm sure they're working on it. The guys are shipping fast. Like, they seem to be shipping lots of stuff a lot of the time. And it's really good to see. But I think one thought from me is, one, tighten up that feedback loop. If you invite people to talk or give you feedback, at least acknowledge that feedback and point them in a place where maybe they'll be able to understand the decision more. And then two, like, release UI, but think about all the use cases. Think about the use cases for not just, I don't know what the message is, but just like, don't release things half-baked, essentially. As much, as good as variables is, sometimes it's, just give it a couple more months to sort it out, you know? You don't have to release it for Webflow comp just because it's Webflow comp, you know? We're smarter than that, so. But anyway, talking, and this is okay, we're on a rant here. Okay, so I'm gonna, JP, Dioniso, I think, sorry if I pronounce your surname wrong, but JP, I think he's UK-based. At least he's got a lot of UK sites. He tweeted, I think it was over the weekend or maybe Friday, that he had been rejected from the Webflow Experts program, but with no feedback. So he didn't know why he'd been rejected. And that, like, lots of people jumped on the Twitter and said, hey, don't worry about it. Eventually you'll be get accepted. You know, keep churning away, you know, plugging away. And I just, it struck me that I thought, you don't need to, this Webflow Experts program feels like it's just a bit of a misnomer. It's just, it calls people on that program a Webflow expert when we know that so many people who use Webflow, who are really good at Webflow, i.e. are experts, haven't got the certificate that says they're a Webflow expert. I'm one of them. You know, I make a living building websites with Webflow. I'm not considered to be a Webflow expert in the grand scheme of things. So that was a bit of a bugbear. It's like, guys, if you're going to be a Webflow expert and put a badge on it, great. If people are going to apply and do, you know, make the effort to try and apply because they value that, great. But when they do apply and they get rejected, like, give them some feedback. It's the whole thing of, if people apply for a job and they don't get through, like, do the kind thing and just say, hey, this is why X, Y, and Z, because they can move on and improve things. And that's the general vibe of Webflow, is just community, help each other out. Like, the whole vibe is just helping each other step up. You know, we're not trying to put each other down to get, you know, we're not like, what was it? I think it's Emily from the Great Design Lead podcast says, like, frogs in a bucket. You know, like, you know, frogs in a bucket. They, if one frog tries to get out, all the other frogs will grab them and pull them back down. No, crabs in a bucket. Sorry, crabs, not frogs. Frogs can't really grab. It was crabs. Crabs in a bucket. And they'll all, like, the crab will grab the crab trying to get out and pull him in. It's like, if I'm not getting out, you're not getting out, kind of vibe, you know?
And that's hilarious.
Webflow is,
so what are
Webflow
we?
Is the opposite of that.
Are we trying to get out of the bucket?
Like, but if we were trying to get out, if I was trying to get out of the a bucket, someone from the Webflow community would say, hey, step on my knee, like, push me up, you know, will give me a hand over the wall and wish me on my way and say, hey, good luck out there. And, you know, if you want, come back and get me later, but don't, like, good luck. Whereas I feel that ethos and that those values should be baked into the Webflow experts feedback loop. And it's like, if someone's going to apply, and, you know, you don't know how much value and currency these people are putting on getting onto this program, and then you just say, no, sorry, and that's it. I just think that's, I go hard. I think that's just rude. I just think that's rude. And, you know, half the reason I haven't applied for this Webflow Experts certificate is, well, one, I don't think it's required to make a living out of Webflow. But two, I don't even want to go through that process of applying and then someone said, no, you're not good enough. And I don't know why I'm not good enough. It might be because I write my CSS classes like they're meant to be written and not with camel case or, and puts, I don't know what it might be, what the rules of the game are. But
yeah, to be fair,
just, it's just frustrating to see, like, someone like JP, who's very talented, just get rejected with no reason whatsoever, you know?
Well, to be fair, though, there is, like, just on broad strokes, there is pretty extensive documentation by the Webflow Experts program and what you need to do in order to pass. So, like, it's, but I get your point. Like, personally, you know, I've only done one Webflow Experts certification, and I still am a Webflow expert. I don't think that should be the case. I should be forced to keep that up every year. I think it's too easy. I think it should be a far higher standard, or if there should be different standards, different levels, different complexities. You should be an animation expert. You should be a CSS expert, maybe a database expert, integrations expert. I think it should be a far higher standard, and I think less people should be getting in, not more, to be fair. But I get that if you've done something and I've failed many an exam and nothing worse not knowing what you've done, or not being able to critique it or even see, oh, look, I actually did that, and or how, why, what would be better here? That's a whole, I think, a different thing. But I get the frustration. I've found Webflow experts valuable. It's very good for clout, you know, just as social proof. I've gotten a few jobs. Have I got jobs through the platform or not? I got leads. A lot of leads I didn't take on. Maybe a few projects. Maybe one project. It's hard to tell. But I definitely did turn it off for quite a bit of time and didn't find it that it was... maybe I found that the leads that were coming through were a little bit bitty or something. I still think there's a place for it. I still think it's worth getting. But I think it should be a much higher standard than what it is.
Yeah. I'd love there to be a consultation with the community, Flow, existing Webflow experts. Webflow experts have been there on there for a while. People who want to be on that program for their perception, or people that just generally work in the community and do it as a living and have some opinion on it. I think it'd be brilliant if they just consulted people on a wider basis and then fed that into a program that got relaunched, essentially. I think, you know, they had that kerfuffle about them doing some beta tests with some person who's no longer with them, who, you know, you were the Upwork vibe that we got from that.
Forgot about that.
You know, yeah. You know, they're firing a few shots that aren't quite landing at the moment. I don't like it's being super picky. You know, we're a podcast, so we've got to have stuff to talk about. So we're being
If we don't bitch about something, you know, we've got nothing.
We got nothing. You know, we can talk about your trip to New York. But you only go there once every, you know, only you go there once every time you get married. Years. So it's not like, you know,
Yeah, we need to bitch about more things. Jeez, we tried very hard there to get each other fighting, but no one bit.
I think your jet lag's still there. I could tell your energy levels are just in a kind of calm place at the moment, which is
I think what needed to happen is I needed to do this pod last Monday and been like, yeah, this is shit, and then come back and say, I'm sorry, Webflow, that it's not that bad. I've worked in it all week, so I kind of disarmed the whole thing by saying, yeah, I worked in it and it's okay.
I got you a Monday too late. Got your Monday too late, but hey, in positive news, the London meetup is in 17 days, depending when you listen to this. When is it? 28th of March in
28th. Thursday, 28th. Yeah.
Jack and Isabel have they got some great speakers. I think it's the same place that it was last time. More pizza than there was last time, because I remember last time there was
pizza ran out.
One slice, one mouth kind of vibe. And even then, I think some of us had to share a slice as well, because Jack had been very kind, actually, and organized all these pizzas. He put everything on for free, and then about 5,000 people turned up and ate all his pizza, which is unfortunate. Thankfully, now you pay. So hopefully that means that... these events are brilliant. I'm gutted I'm not able to fly over. We just got... a lot going on at the moment over here, but it's just, yeah. I remember last time.
Yeah, I've got a ticket and I'm going to.
Yeah, you have. Yeah.
I'm going to go over and just do it over and back. Get in late into London and just fly home early the next morning kind of vibe. pretty busy time of year as well. But fair play. That was a class meetup the last time, actually. It was like first time everybody had been like out of their bedroom pretty much since COVID. So there was a nice little, there was a good giddiness, you know, which is mental. Think about it. A year ago. Was it a year ago? It was only a year ago. It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was about this time last year. It was last February. And yeah, we were just like so excited to do anything except being in our bedrooms. World has changed a lot in a year. So
it has, yeah. I remember that. Yeah, we stayed in the hotel by Heathrow, didn't we? And I remember Ben was trying to get to North London somehow. But for some reason, his Uber wasn't working or his phone was dead or something. So we booked him an Uber and then realized that because he was taking an Uber, we couldn't book ourselves. So then we flagged this cab down. We got the cab.
No, we got an Uber.
Brilliantly. Ordered us an Uber.
I ordered the Uber because you ordered one for Ben. That's what happened.
Oh, yeah. So I had, and luckily we were staying in the same place.
We were staying in the same hotel and then we stopped off in McDonald's and...
Oh, we stopped in McDonald's and...
You went in, you ordered a burger, sat down and came back in. And the taxi driver wouldn't let me go because he was worried that we'd run away, even though it was Uber. But anyway.
No. What happened was I said I'd go in. I went to the toilet and I'd order. And I ordered what you had asked for. So I came back out.
Right.
And I'd half eaten the stuff that I, because I was waiting for it, I'd half eaten my cheeseburger. But I also had stuff for you. And in the same time, you thought, where the hell have I gone? So you went through the drive-thru and you actually ordered for me and and the driver. So I got back into the cab and we each had two McDonald's each. And the driver had his meal for the evening as well. And it was brilliant.
Filet-O-Fish, which I thought is very funny that it's called a Filet-O-Fish. All right, before we start telling more dark stories about 3 o'clock in the morning in London, I think we should sign off.
We should sign off. Anyway, next episode, we've got a special guest. We'll reveal him on the morning of a special guest, but we've got a special guest coming on. And we're looking forward to that. But thanks for listening. See you next time.
See you later. Good luck.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Good luck. Bye-bye.